Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the fifth week of Coronavirus Central. I'm your host, Tom Kaczynski, and we're getting ready to start our 25th episode, if you'll believe that. It seems like we've been doing this forever, but I know we've just started. There's a long way to go. I want to say welcome to all of our new listeners. Thank you to all of our current listeners. We appreciate that you use us as your choice for information. Coronavirus Central is the effort of an open source intelligence network. We're now well over 1,000 members at t.me/coronaviruscentral. We're working on preparedness, networking, medical research, and we're putting a lot of pieces together to try to give you hopefully the most useful coverage that you'll find anywhere on the internet or otherwise about what's happening with the coronavirus outbreak. And I want to thank everyone. Hope you all had a very good weekend. And we got a lot of news today to get into, so I'm going to jump right into it. We're going to take another deeper look at what's happening in Italy, because I think that's teaching us a lot about what we might expect for a model throughout the West. We're going to take a deeper look into Germany than we've done to this point. Going to go into New York, very big cluster starting to become aware there. Shouldn't say it's cluster, really. It's evidence of community spread. We're going to talk about Houston, Texas. A lot of people have been asking about that, did a little bit of research. Happy to talk about those issues. And we're going to look also at the beginning of maybe some solutions that are out there for testing as these kits begin coming online, and about the economic problems, which are an integral part of this. So got a lot to go into today. And whatever we don't cover today, hopefully we can get to tonight. It'll be a 7 o'clock show on YouTube. To find the link to the channel, just click on coronaviruscentral.net. Go over there and check it out, as well as we will be launching our Kickstarter later. We want to put out the best information out there. We want people to work on this full time. You want to stay alive and be safe. We all can do this together, but we need your help. So into the stories. Start today with COVID19info.live, as we do every day, to give us the latest up-to-date statistics. And as of right now, 7:20 a.m. on the U.S. East Coast, we have 111,286 confirmed cases with 3,892 confirmed deaths. So that is our number at the moment. And just go through some countries very quick. China claims to have things more or less under control at 80,739, 3,120 deaths. Although there's still evidence that the only way in which their factories is working is that they're running the electricity. So who knows what's happening there? South Korea is tapering just a bit, 7,478 cases, 53 deaths. It's important to remember with the South Korea numbers, they're up on about 150,000 cases searched out. So South Korea is anticipating these events, and they're basically marking their cases more early. So we do expect some of those numbers will probably rise, but there is this ongoing question of what different strains look like. To that end, we have the next two countries, Italy at 7,375 cases, 366 reported deaths. Iran, 7,161 cases, 237 reported deaths, and we have reason to believe that at least the Iranian numbers are low. Right there, those are very difficult situations. We're going to talk about Italy a lot today. We know, or at least I've read in a couple places, they're dealing with the L strain as opposed to the S strain that's supposedly more virulent in Italy, as well as Iran. And a lot of the spread that we are now seeing throughout the Western world is being contact traced back through the Italian strain, which, obviously would go back to Wuhan and to China if you go back far enough. Okay. So the rest of Europe is blowing up very, very quickly, too. We're seeing basically case doubling every other day at this point. France, 1,209 with 19 deaths. Germany, 1,151, but no deaths yet. Spain, 911, 25 deaths. As of this morning, the United States of America, 564 cases, 22 deaths. And that number is going to keep peaking, unfortunately. Japan, a big jump, 511 and 17 deaths. Switzerland, 337, 2 deaths. The UK, 280, 3 deaths. Netherlands, 265, 3 deaths. Belgium, 239. Sweden, 203. And you're seeing a lot of countries jump up into that 100 range here. We'll just go through real fast. And these are all ones that are, Norway 176, Singapore 150, Malaysia 117, Hong Kong 115, Austria 112, We got Australia up to about 92 here. Just taking a quick peek where these numbers are sitting. So a lot of countries are really starting to make the jump up to a higher level. Canada's at 66. That's probably a little low, to be honest with you. So we're seeing all these countries make the leap, and I think it's going to continue. It's going to get faster, and we'll see what that means. But we definitely think that at this point it is pandemic. That's to say, it's everywhere and spreading on its own, and the community spread has been confirmed in multiple countries to the extent where case tracking, although it can perhaps reduce different clusters, is beyond the ability of governments in most places to enact. So that's a problem, and it means we're all going to have to deal with this together. I mean, so we'll deal with that as it comes. So I had one story I wanted to share with you. This is from Japan. It's from the Japan Times, written from Reuters, apparently. 7-Eleven employee in Yamanashi Prefecture tests positive for coronavirus as separate cases linked to meningitis. Just a quick update from this because this is something I haven't seen before, and I think it's a data point we need to put into the mix. A worker at a 7-Eleven convenience store in Yamanashi Prefecture has contracted the new coronavirus, the company said on Sunday. The unit of Retail Group 7 and Holdings said it temporarily closed the store for cleaning and disinfection after the infection was confirmed and implemented various safety policies at its shops nationwide, including the wearing of masks. A separate coronavirus patient in the prefecture was in serious condition, the Yamanashi Prefecture government said on Saturday. The man in his 20s tested positive for coronavirus on Saturday and is unconscious with a fever, pneumonia, and meningitis, the government said. This marks the first case in Japan where the new coronavirus has caused meningitis, University of Yamanashi President Shinji Shimada said at a news conference on Saturday. Across the nation, a total of 33 new infections were reported on Sunday, including 14 in Osaka, 11 in Aichi Prefecture, 3 in Hokkaido, 2 each in Hyogo and Kochi prefectures, and 1 in Saitama Prefecture. In Himeji, Hyogo Prefecture, a female nurse in her 50s was infected, the local government said. The number of infections in Hokkaido rose to 101. And that's the northern island at the top of Japan. So it's interesting, they have different clusters there. The number of infected people in Japan rose to 1,189, including the crew members and passengers from the Diamond Princess cruise ship. In Nagoya, a deceased man tests positive for COVID-19, according to an individual close to the matter. The elderly man died after being admitted to a hospital after complaining that he wasn't feeling well. There's a chance he came in contact with someone who had already been tested positive for COVID-19. So just, I don't want to read, because there's so many things, I'll never get through them if I read everything, that they're saying that they expect testing capacity will increase to over 7,000 per day by the end of this month from around 4,200 on March 5th and 6,200 now, because national health insurance can now be used to cover coronavirus testing. Health Minister Katsunobu Koto told NHK, that's their state TV, in an interview aired Sunday. So the move, however, only shortens the process for getting tested. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said the government will launch a plan to extend zero-interest loans with no collateral to small and mid-sized companies reeling amid the COVID-19 outbreak. And the government will also financially support parents forced to take time to look after their children after Abe's abrupt decision to close all schools from last Monday to the start of the new school year in April. And I suspect that's because there was being spread happening through the kids, which we've reported on. So I mentioned this article. I think it's important. Meningitis, you know, being obviously, meningitis being the swelling of the membranes that cover the brain and the spinal cord. And that adds more evidence to this idea that it not only is, have we seen cases now where there are neurological impacts from COVID, but we're also seeing, you know, here more evidence that's trying to attack that. And just a real quick read of some symptoms you would expect from viral meningitis: headaches, fever, stiff neck, seizures, sensitivity to bright light, sleepiness, lethargy, nausea and vomiting, and decreased appetite. So we'll have to see how that all connects through and what actually is causing this, if you have these viral meningitis. But certainly we've seen this with other things. You know, influenza can cause this, HIV can cause this. It's not crazy to say coronavirus won't cause it. but it does usually go away. But something to keep an eye on for that swelling, what impact it's having, and what that indicates for what we have going forward. So I wanted to put that out there for you as another data point in our sort of growing knowledge of what we've seen in some case studies. We're going to do a lot of look into Italy today, because what they're facing in a lot of ways is becoming the worst case scenario that we've seen since Wuhan. So we're going to start with a piece from the AP. And Italy decided to quarantine basically the majority of the northern part of their country, Milan, Venice. There were a lot of different places. So here's an update from the AP. This was published today. Italy took a page from China's playbook Sunday, attempting to lock down 16 million people, more than a quarter of its population, for nearly a month to halt the relentless march of the new coronavirus across Europe. Weddings and museums, movie theaters and shopping malls were all affected by the new restrictions, which focus on a swath of northern Italy but are disrupting daily life around the country. Confusion reigned after the quarantine was announced, with residents and tourists from Venice to Milan trying to figure out how and when the new measures would take effect. Travelers crammed aboard standing room only trains, tucking their faces into scarves and sharing sanitizing gel. After mass testing covered more than 7,300 infections, Italy's outbreak surged to nearly equal South Korea's, which had been tapering off and trailing China, where COVID-19 is in retreat. Italy's death toll rose to 366. Around the globe, more and more events were canceled or hidden behind closed doors. From the Pope's Sunday service to a Formula One car race in Bahrain to a sumo competition in Japan, where wrestlers arrived at the arena in face masks and were required to use hand sanitizer before entering. In Saudi Arabia, all schools and universities were to close starting Monday, following similar moves in central China, Japan, and other Gulf countries. Questions grew about whether to maintain U.S. presidential campaign rallies and other potential super-spreading gatherings of people as the virus entered new U.S. states. Italian Premier Giuseppe Conte signed a quarantine decree early Sunday for the country's prosperous north. Areas under lockdown include Milan, Italy's financial hub in the main city of Lombardy, and Venice, the main city in the neighboring Veneto region. Veneto. I know how to do that. All right, the extraordinary measures will be in place until April 3rd. Tourists in the region, including those from home, were free to head home, the Italian Transport Ministry said, noting that airports and train stations remained open. Well, how much good is that going to do for where they go to, right? The Pope, who has been ill, held his Sunday blessing by video instead of in person, even though he was not directly affected by the lockdown. He described feeling like he was in a cage. And then they're talking here about China, so we'll skip over that, because we know about that, right? Italy is closing all museums and archaeological sites, even those far from the lockdown zone. It suspended all weddings until April 3rd. The northern regions concerned by Sunday's decree are closing cinemas and ski slopes. Eateries all around Italy are expected somehow to keep patrons a meter away from each other. Good luck. The Vatican museums are now closed, according to Sistine Chapel, in yet another blow to Italy's all-important tourism industry. Alitalia, the Italian airline that was already financially ailing before the virus, suspended all flights from Milan's Malpensa airport starting Monday. Lombardy's governor, who is in quarantine himself, sought to calm the public, discouraging hoarding and insisting we're not going to war. Well, you know, we are at war with this thing, and it seems to be winning, and, you know, it declares war on us, and you can't just hide from that. Anyway, chaos erupted in the hours before Conte signed the decree as word leaked about the planned quarantine. In a reversal of the stereotypical north-south tension in Italy, the governor Puglia urged northerners to stay away and not bring virus infections down south. Get off at the first railway station. Don't take planes, Governor Michele Emiliano said in his dramatic appeal. Turn around in your cars. Get off the Pullman buses at the next stop. So they're talking about more questions with the cruise ships. Okay, we'll skip all that. That's about the U.S. So Italy is shutting itself down because they're trying to stop the spread. Of course, it's a little late, but they're trying because they're having a lot of problems. So I'm going to read you another article here. This is from Il Fatto Quotidiano. Let's see if my pronunciation is right and see if I can get this thing to load in translation here. Okay, I got it up here, so I'll read the title. Keep in mind, if the pronunciation is a little wonky, this isn't translation. So, and my Italian is just not good enough for me to try to do it on the fly. All right, coronavirus. The doctors of intensive care in Lombardy say timely actions are disastrous health calamity. the access priority hypothesis, whoever is most likely to survive first. So that's pretty lousy rendering. What's happening is in Milan, they have had a problem, and in Lombardy, which is they don't have enough intensive care unit capacity to cover everyone who is sick. And so they're starting to have conversations in the in Italy, like they had mentioned previously, in the UK, that they were deciding how to ration care with those patients most likely to survive and who were frankly younger being given first access to limited resources on the theory that A, they'd be more likely to survive, and B, they would be less they would be able to be more quickly turned out of the very low capacity of intensive care unit beds they have. So I'm going to read the article so you can see just how bad it is. And this is a prediction of the problem that we are expecting to face in the United States, Australia, Canada, definitely the United Kingdom. They're in a really bad way. And all throughout Europe, honestly. America's probably got about twice the ICU capacity. However, America has that because our health style choices are not necessarily the best, which has certain other things, and a lot of that capacity is presently being used. So it's something that we are keeping a very close eye on, as this at the present is probably the single most important trigger that could expand the case fatality rate, that is the access or lack of access, I should say, to the medical care that will be required, including ventilators. So in these next, and there's another article after this I'm going to share from the Independent. One of the things that this show has been requested to do on several occasions is to help put more case study information out there. I want to say thank you to all the medical professionals who regularly listen to this, from the researchers to the nurses to the doctors. I'm sure it must be painful to listen to me butcher your craft, but I'm definitely working to get the information out there. We are working to get that in the hands of medical professionals and hopefully get some feedback also moving in the other direction so that we can inform our public audience. This is a collaborative effort. It's not just a show, but it's a community that's growing to survive in a time when information is precious and must be timely. So, the alarm of the coordination of intensive care of the region most affected in this letter to Fontana. In the absence of timely, support, we will be forced to face an event we can only qualify as a disastrous health calamity. The Italian Society of Anesthesia Intensive Care has released a technical document in which it writes, "It may be necessary to set an age limit on entry into intensive care. It is not a question of making merely valuable choices, but of reserving resources that could be very scarce for those who are primarily more likely to survive." That's a strong statement, and this is coming out. This is from yesterday, and excuse me, this was from Saturday. I apologize. So, set an age limit for access to intensive care based on the greatest chance of survival. This is what the Italian Society of Anesthesia, Analgesia, Resuscitation, and Intensive Care suggests in a technical document linked to the coronavirus emergency. It may be necessary to place an age limit on entry into the ICU. It is not a question of making merely valuable choices, but of reserving resources that could be very scarce for those who are primarily likely to survive, and second, to those who can have more years of life saved with a view to maximizing the benefits for the greatest number of people. It reads the report entitled Recommendation of Clinical Ethics for Admission to Intensive Treatments and for Their Suspension in Exceptional Conditions of Imbalance Between Needs and Available Resources. Well, that's a mouthful, of which basically says we don't have enough beds, so who gets the sticks? The report was also disseminated and fully published on the CRT website and is addressed to doctors who in the Lombardy region have decided to write directly to Governor Attilio Fontana to ask him to express their concerns to the central government. In the absence of timely and adequate provisions from the authorities, we will be forced to face an event that we can only qualify as, quote, a disastrous health calamity, reads the document addressed to the president by the Coordination of Intensive Care in Lombardy. The dossier of anesthesiologists and resuscitators, priority for access to intensive care, is a real alarm that is launched by doctors. According to the Scientific Society, the document aims to provide support to the anesthesiologists and resuscitators currently committed to managing the emergency that has no precedent for characteristic and proportions. In a scenario of total saturation of intensive resources, deciding to maintain a first come, first serve criterion would still amount not to, or are choosing to not treat any subsequent patients which would be excluded from intensive care reads between the 15 points of the 7-page text, which you can read here, and the link is in there if you want to click that. Attention to those who can benefit from treatments, according to CRT doctors, and a possible judgment of inappropriateness in accessing intensive care based solely on criteria of distributive justice, which is to say the extreme balance between request and availability, their words, finds justification in the extraordinary nature of the situation. We are aware, continues the document, that tackling this issue could be morally and emotionally difficult. As a scientific society, we could entrust everything to the common sense, sensitivity, and experience of the individual anesthesiologist, or attempt, as we have chosen to do, to illuminate the decision-making process with this little support that could help reduce anxiety, stress, and above all, the sense of loneliness. Nobody wants to be the one picking who lives and dies, right? With this document of recommendations, CRT is not proposing to treat some patients and limit treatments to others, they conclude. On the contrary, it is the emergency events that are forcing the anesthesiologist to focus attention on the appropriateness of the treatments for those who can benefit most, where resources are not enough for all. The letter to Fontana says, and that's the head of the Lombardy government there, drastic measures or this will be a disastrous health disaster. The issue of intensive care places the number one, the issue of intensive care places is the number one emergency triggered by the spread of the COVID-19 virus. Precisely to deal with the lack of beds in hospitals, the government provided in the decree passed last night the possibility of requisitioning hotels to be transformed into places of collective home care. And we've seen this in the U.S. Think about those hotels we saw purchased in outside Seattle and Kent that we reported on. Structures to be used for the quarantine, I assume that's quarantine, of the positives not in serious conditions, which would therefore free places in hospitals. The coordination of intensive therapies of Lombardy refers to healthcare facilities in his document sent to the governor, who is asked to bring it to the attention of the government and commissioner for the coronavirus emergency, Angelo Borelli. This is a serious event that endangers the survival of not only COVID patients, but that of the population that in normal conditions turns to the healthcare system for the treatment of acute or chronic events of any failure. Healthcare facilities are subjected to a pressure that is greater than any possibility of an adequate response, despite the enormous commitment of all healthcare personnel and the deployment of all available tools. Correct management of the phenomenon is now impossible, reads the letter signed by the representatives of the Lombard Intensive Therapies. Outpatient activities, non-urgent surgery, hospitalizations, and medicine, the document continues to fall into levels close to zero. So that's something we haven't talked about enough, but it's really a big deal of this, which is the number of people who need regular medical maintenance now who are either unable to get it or who have to contemplate going into these very risky environments with a dwindling supply stock to get support. These are things we fully anticipated and talked about over the last few weeks in the show, but here is the manifestation in a modern first world Western country of what we were fearing would happen and, you know, what the lack of preparation. And to be fair, I'm not sure you could have prevented it, but at least they could have made more of an effort. But now we're seeing the realization. So the entire network of intensive care has been restructured, creating dedicated structures in which fully harnessed to defend against infection, technologically complex, unfortunately available in limited numbers. Also, for this reason, the immediate adoption of drastic measures is aimed at reducing social and useful contacts to contain the epidemic as absolutely necessary. So what they're thinking there is they want to try to stop community spread by making sure that they keep the sick separated from the coronavirus people. And that's a good idea, although you're at a point where it's going to be very difficult to do that because your medical personnel are already overwhelmed. Then the warning, in the absence of timely and adequate provisions from the authorities, concludes the document, we will be forced to face an event that we can only qualify as a disastrous health calamity. So that's in translation, but that's what the Italians are telling their own people. And I think that's a good way to put it, a disastrous health calamity. So I'll put that up there, and it gives you a feel for what's actually happening. It's not just the flu. Don't panic. You're not going crazy, right? And I know a lot of people have been gaslit over this. If you don't know what that word means, it's where you know something that's true. People around you treat you like you're crazy for thinking you are, and then they attack you rather than your facts. keep strong, keep talking. You're saving lives. You're helping people. Be confident. Don't let anyone else dissuade you from what you know to be right. It is a hard thing, but I assure you, as someone who has a long track record of saying things that people don't want to hear, that eventually, whether people like you or not, they will respect you. And in time, they may even come to appreciate you, because with this situation, we're dealing with something with a truth that will save lives and prevent our fellow citizens in all of our countries from being at more risk. So keep at it. You guys are doing a good work. I'm proud of you. Okay. So we got a next story here. This is from theindependent.co.uk. This was published one day ago from Sean Lintern. And this is "Get Ready, Italian Doctors Warn Europe of Coronavirus Impact on Hospitals." And this is really a nice cautionary tale for what we're probably going to experience starting at maybe next week, but definitely the week afterwards. And it will be tough, British doctor admits after Italian experts warn 1 in 10 of those infected need intensive care. And to be honest with you, that number right now is actually about half the number that we saw in Wuhan. So as we go through this article, I'll make the case, as the article indirectly does, that number is going to peak further and that we should be ready. But we now have a minimum baseline outside of China in 1 in 10 people needing intensive care. That's a big number, and that number may go further. Italian doctors have warned medics across Europe to get ready for coronavirus in a letter revealing up to 10% of all those infected with coronavirus need intensive care, with hospitals becoming overwhelmed. And there's a link in it to the letter if you want to read that. The letter seen by The Independent reveals the scale of the impact on hospitals in Italy, where 5,883 patients, although that has jumped quite a bit, as I would remind you, that's up to 7,400 just about now, have been infected with the virus, and 233 people have died as of 6 p.m. on Saturday. In the notes sent to the European Society of Intensive Care Medicine, critical care experts Professor Maurizio Ciccioni, Professor Antonio Pesenti, and Professor Giacomo Grasselli from the University of Milan revealed how difficult it had been to treat coronavirus patients. They said, and this, I want to draw a point to this. This is what we're seeing on the ground. And for the medical professionals, this is the most active, up-to-date resource that I've seen on what the case strains are looking like, especially as the U.S. is going to get a lot of this L strain in theory. We are seeing a high percentage of positive cases being admitted to our intensive care units in the range of 10% of all positive patients. We wish to convey a strong message. Get ready. They said Italian hospitals had seen a very high number of intensive care patients who were admitted almost entirely for severe lung failure caused by the virus and needing ventilators to help them breathe. They said the hospitals across the UK and Europe needed to prepare for a surge in admissions and cautioned against working in silos. They said it was vital hospitals had the equipment to protect staff and that staff were trained in wearing the kit. And just to add a little detail to this from what we've seen from case studies, you're going to see the flu-like symptoms like the fever, the coughing, the achiness at day 3 to 5 of the infection in the median. You usually see somewhere between days 7 and 9 the pneumonia symptoms really kick up, and they've been using CT scans to search for ground glass opacity in the lower lung areas as a way of both diagnosing that this is happening for those that don't have test kits, as well as a means of monitoring. They've also had to keep a close eye on cardiovascular health, as that has been an issue, and potential neurological infection, you know, in the cerebrospinal fluid. That's what the cases are telling us. We continue. They added, increase your total ICU capacity, identify early hospitals that can manage the initial surge in a safe way, get ready to prepare ICU areas where to cohort COVID-19 patients in every hospital if necessary. There have been concerns the NHS will struggle to cope in the event of a sustained coronavirus outbreak where large numbers of patients will require intensive care. The UK's chief medical officer, Professor Chris Whitty, has said critical care units may struggle. Latest figures show NHS intensive care units were running at about 80% capacity at the start of March. Overall, the NHS has one of the lowest ratios of hospital beds per population in Europe. And I know for a fact they got about 800 beds open in the UK, or in England, I should say. There may be other ones in Scotland. UK hospitals are already discussing how they will need to ration care to those most likely to survive in the event there are not enough beds, ventilators, or staff for the numbers infected if the worst case scenarios prove accurate. And I gotta say, they keep saying worst case scenarios to not scare people. Now we have observed scenario that's happening in Iran, it's happening in Italy, and it's coming soon to a country near you. I mean, at this point, given the things that were not done, that's an inevitability. They need to be managing public expectations differently. And frankly, they need to be speaking more clearly to the needs of high-risk populations to self-segregate, where they encourage them not to go in places where they could get sick, because realistically, that is a lottery ticket in a contest you don't want to be a part of. Okay. A senior consultant at a major London hospital told The Independent the letter was a concern. He said, "It will be tough. It's going to be hard. My worry is staffing. A lot of doctor, or excuse me, if a lot of doctors and nurses become sick, that will be the crunch. A third of staff are self-isolating. That is the time when we stop being able to cope." He added, "While the NHS was prepared as it could be for the virus, patients could suffer. What I am more worried about is if the intensive care unit is full and we don't have enough nurses, the anesthetists will be called upon to look on patients outside of the ICU in theater and recovery areas. If that happens, we won't have the capacity for patients who need urgent surgery for appendicitis, blood clots, etc. And that's when patients will start getting worse care as a result. These are the people who will die unnecessarily. The big challenge will be keeping the anesthetic service going. Anesthetic staff are always at most at risk because we deal with patients always, or airways, excuse me." In a separate note, Italian intensive care doctor Giuseppe Nattino from the Lecco province of northern Italy has shared a clinical summary of the patients his unit has been treating, which doctors described as, quote, frightening in terms of what it could mean for the UK. The technical note spells out how patients with coronavirus experience a severe infection in both of their lungs, requiring major ventilation support. It also reveals the effect of the virus, which affects blood pressure, the heart, kidneys, and liver, with patients needing sustained treatment. Dr. Natino said, "A week ago, we opened up a 6-bed ICU for COVID-19 critically ill patients. In 2 days, they're filled up, and we extended it to 10 beds on March 3rd, which filled up the same afternoon. Now we're planning to merge the cardio and general ICUs to use the general ICU beds for 10 more COVID-19 patients." In an alarming development, Dr. Natino said younger patients were now being affected, saying the ages of patients range from 46 to 83, with only a small number having important underlying conditions. And that's actually really troubling there, the fact that we have people who don't appear to have underlying conditions getting sick. Could this represent a more virulent strain that's coming out of Italy? Maybe. He added, "The last days are showing a younger population involved, as if the elderly and weaker part of the population crashed early, and now younger patients, having exhausted their physiological reserves, come to overcrowded, overwhelmed hospitals with little resources left." And I think this is something we really need to think about, which is that the people who are coming to the hospital first might be the ones who are least able to fight it off, but we've seen a really long lag time in the amount of time that it takes coronavirus to impact people. We've talked about this asymptomatic period where people are active spreaders. Could that be the amount of time where the virus is configuring itself to be more successful in the body and fighting a sort of long war against our immune system? Here, with this evidence from Dr. Natino on the ground, we're starting to see maybe some evidence that there might be a second wave forming of people in this sort of community outbreak where the oldest people clog up the medicine, area, right? And I don't mean that in any insulting way. It's just the numbers that are involved there. And then you end up with younger people getting sick who can't get access because the system is already overrun. And so really it's something we don't know the answer to, but now we have a little bit more evidence. And the assumption that has been made from the beginning by some people, let's say, is that this is just an old person's disease. And I think that that's, while it's true, the elderly are at high risk, the idea that if you're young and healthy, you're going to just skate through this is presumptuous. All right. He added, "The last days are showing a younger population." Sorry. One UK doctor said this latter point needed careful consideration by the NHS, adding, "We need to be careful to have some ICU capacity for younger patients. This is where important, difficult decisions need to be made." Another intensive care doctor from the north of England said Dr. Natino's notes showed coronavirus patients suffered a lack of oxygen in their blood, meaning they need a ventilator, with large parts of the lung affected by the virus. The doctor added, "The inflammation in their lungs carries on for a long time. Patients need strong drugs and high doses to maintain their blood pressure. Let's just make a quick note here. Remember, it's impacting the ACE2 pathway. What does that do? It regulates the constriction of the veins in the arteries. So, not surprising that you have blood pressure problems, right? Because you're having the intervention at that level. You're having inflammation in the lower lungs. You're having the alveoli, the air sacs filled up with fluid. And we also have evidence now between the meningitis and the neurological components that we saw, impacting people, that it's trying to disrupt your ability to breathe potentially. So a lot of evidence about these things happening, and I think the severity of the case is directly contingent upon the level of medical support and rapidity with which it's administered to fight this virus. Okay, let's see here. B-b-b-b-b-b. Kidney failure requiring a kidney machine is common, so we're talking about dialysis there, and the patients later in their stay are starting to show blood tests showing liver damage. It's a big question we have. What are the long-term chronic damages? We saw on Saturday, I was reading the article about the cardiovascular chronic damage that is starting to be seen. And, what does that mean for a disease that's endemic? We don't know. But I think these are, obviously, it's going to be hard to get this right away. But I think a lot of effort needs to be put into monitoring patients post coronavirus, especially those who had a clinical treatment in the hospital, to observe what the long-term impacts are to their, their neurological system, to their liver, to their kidneys, to their heart, to their lungs. And if we, I suspect from what we're seeing just starting to come out of China, we're going to see that there is damage that is ongoing. And what that means is something we need to carefully consider. And one more reason why, if you're not sick yet, do what you can to make sure you don't get sick, man, whatever it takes. Because we just don't know. The amount of things we don't know continues to outnumber the things we do know. The spokesperson for the NHS said every country is responding to this new virus. And as the chief medical officer has said, routine, non-urgent services could well come under pressure. So it's right that the lessons and recommendations from Italy are now being put into practice in England. As the whole world continues to understand more about this virus, its impact on people, and likely demand on health services, it's important to remember the NHS in England has world-leading expertise in every hospital across the country, and healthcare professionals who run them are now actively planning to respond to flexibility to manage new demand. Doesn't that sound kind of like the speech you give? Okay, here, go charge into that wall and see what happens. I mean, I hate to be so cynical. I know they're working hard, but they got a capacity problem, and we all do. And as we see in this article, once again, in correspondence with what the Italians are saying, tough choices are going to have to be made about who gets access to care. And there's no way around that. And even it's like the old Rush song, even if you choose not to choose, you still have made a choice, right? There really is free will in this, that you have to make a decision as a medical system who you're going to help, how you're going to help them, and on what criteria. If you don't have capacity, and the unwillingness of the governments of especially the Western world to contemplate quarantines for fear of either political insensitivity, economic reasons, or whatever, or political gain, frankly, let's be honest, has so exacerbated this in the continuing mishmash policy response at a public level, where containment has, I think, largely been in ba abandoned for the most part, at least in the United States. I don't think we're going to try to do it for a lot of different reasons that are complex and local. But we're going to see in Europe if this helps in Lombardy at all, but I suspect it was too late because we do have that gap period, and we're seeing this, I think, manifest in the huge numbers out of not just Germany and France, but Switzerland as well, as a good example of a bordering country. Okay, so let's see, I don't have to read this article because I did already report that Rome shut down the mass. So give you a couple quick hits from Germany just to give you an example of a country in Europe and what they're doing. So this is from Reuters, from Thomas Eskret. This was from 10:34 a.m. Yesterday. Coronavirus. Germany promises support to companies, urges public to stay home. Germany promised to aid companies hit by demand collapsing as a result of the coronavirus epidemic, while its health minister urged a halt to large public events in the hope of reducing pub burden on the healthcare system. So you see, once again, that we've been talking about this idea that countries are reacting rather than acting. They wait until the problem is there and then they try to mitigate it rather than anticipating these problems and trying to prevent them. Same thing here. We're seeing in Germany now where they have 1,000 confirmed cases. And it's saying it's far short of Italy's tally, but we know they're going to be there in like 5 or 6 days. And this is the problem. that by the time they act, they're making it so much harder to have community spread. Just, and to put it in a sense for you, imagine that with 100 people all talking to 10 people, you need to find 10,000, or excuse me, 1,000 people. With 1,000 people all talking to 10 people, you need to find 10,000 people. And you begin to see the problem of contact tracing. If you are not doing it instantaneously, there's no point in doing it at all. And what we've seen is in the West, in Germany, France, the UK, the US, Canada, you know, we have seen over and over again, and to Japan, actually, as best I can tell, too. So it's not just a Europe split. They're just not looking for these cases. And that's where the community spread is coming from, that they didn't do active case containment, or they couldn't. I mean, it could be a lot more complicated, because I don't think they've had good understanding of all the means of transmission. We'll have another article on that near the end of the show. Okay, but in any case, let's continue hearing about Germany. With coronavirus cases spreading rapidly, pressure is growing for a broader response in the country after Italy locked down swaths of the north to contain the raging epidemic there. Germany had 902 cases on Sunday afternoon, far short of Italy's tally of 6,000, but that included a large cluster of 392 in one municipality in western Germany. A German national has died from the disease in Egypt. The task now was to slow the virus spread. Health Minister Jens Spahn said on Sunday, coronavirus has been in Germany since Wednesday last week. Our priority now is to slow its spread, he said on Twitter. The slower the virus spreads, the better the healthcare system can cope. That is true. You want to see the epidemic curve flatten so that you don't overwhelm the resources. But the speed of transmission means that's going to be very challenging indeed. And we're probably past the point realistically where that can be accomplished. But it's still worth trying. I mean, it does. Every life saved has value, right? After Italy and France, Germany has the largest number of cases in Europe, and concern is growing at both the economic and public health consequences of what threatens to become a global pandemic. At talks late on Sunday, the party and Chancellor Angela Merkel's governing coalition also agreed to make it easier for companies to claim subsidies to support workers on reduced working hours until the end of the year. That would make it possible for firms to cut the hours and wages they offer their workers, with the German government making up the shortfall, sparing workers from layoffs which might otherwise become necessary. Several German companies have been hit by the epidemic, including car maker Daimler and airline group Lufthansa, which has canceled half of its flights over the coming months. And so they were just talking about the decision to cut down on public events that, you know, the Bundesliga, that's the soccer league over there, that they will look at potentially shutting that down and whatnot. So you see they're starting to issue a little bit of a response, but fundamentally, I mean, in Germany has a pretty decent healthcare system. It's efficient, but the numbers are going to overwhelm it too. So, and one of the interesting things that's happening that I want to share with you is there were a couple of stories I read. I'm just going to touch on them real shortly. This is from Nizam Sontag, okay? This is a Swiss paper, and it was talking about how Germany was shutting off the Swiss ability to import masks from them because they're keeping things there. But Switzerland, being a landlocked country, has some problems. They can't get masks anywhere. And if you are in a smaller country that does not have a lot of production capacity and that you don't have the ability to produce things domestically, you're going to have a big problem. And what happened in this case, just want to give you a summary of this because I don't want to go super deep into it, is that the Swiss wanted to get masks from Germany. Germany couldn't produce enough masks for themselves, and they didn't send them there. So it's not such a problem if you're in the United States, maybe, or Germany, or perhaps the UK. But if you're in a smaller country, like, say, Switzerland or the Netherlands, or a country with less capacity, if this gets into a country in the third world, where it really starts to spread, if you're not producing your own goods, don't expect to be bailed out from anyone anytime soon. And the problem with that is, as this is a global epidemic, what's going to happen is those countries will become clusters from which this will potentially spread and worsen because, you know, people are going to be moving around and borders, especially in Europe in particular, are pretty open. I don't think that they would fundamentally, if a country in Europe started to have real pressures towards collapse, one of the smaller countries, I can't imagine people, the Dutch, for instance, being really successfully hemmed in by the French and Germans and the Belgians. So it's going to be a problem. And, you know, we see countries in Eastern Europe acting the same way. Bild has a piece about this, how the Czechs are now having random stops that of Germans, people coming in from Germany, I shouldn't say just German citizens, coming in. Now, in Europe, the rule is the Schengen zone is such that you don't have restrictions for European citizens between different ports of entry. It would be like someone like me, a Mainer, crossing into New Hampshire. We don't have issues, whereas if you went into like Canada, you would, because it'd be like going into Russia, which is not part of the Eurozone. So you have these issues, and what you see is the Czech Republic is now conducting random searches just to get a feel for if this virus is spreading from Germany into their country. And I guarantee you that that's being done in preparation for the idea that you're going to see some of these Eastern European countries potentially consider having the policy option of shutting down their borders. And once one country does it and takes all the opprobrium for it, I think you'll see other countries do it. And given that that Italy has it worse, and that you see France, Spain, Germany, the Netherlands, Switzerland, and increasingly Sweden coming along, you may see the reimposition of borders within Europe for health reasons, and the countries may reassert sovereignty in what will probably be a devastating blow to the European Union and its legitimacy. And there's a lot of economic, political consequences of that, of countries acting quite rationally to protect their own population from the spread of COVID. Because they don't have control of what decisions other countries are or are not making. So it's a piece to keep an eye on as we watch borders around the world. I wouldn't be surprised in the future to see a shutdown at certain spots between the American and Canadian border. Right now, it doesn't seem like the situation's as bad as in Mexico. But that being said, the fact that San Diego had all those quarantine patients and Tijuana and San Diego tends to be a very porous border. I would expect if there is a vector of contamination into Mexico, or conversely, from Mexico into the United States, it would probably be in that area. Second possibility maybe being El Paso and Juarez. All right, let's go to New York, right? All right, so this is from NBC News 4 out of New York City. New York actually has a cluster that is racing to get big or as big or bigger than the Seattle cluster. I think it's the epicenter, as we would have expected, of the largest group in the East Coast. I think that it's also likely. We've seen Boston, even though I'm not covering it here, has about 30 cases as of right now. There's a cluster in Rhode Island, a couple in the Philadelphia suburbs, and I've learned about quite a few cases in Maryland toward the DC area. So over there, mass transit very heavily used, a lot of people, close proximity. This is going to spread quick within the East Coast corridor that's there, the so-called ACLA corridor that runs probably from about Portland, Maine, down to Richmond, Virginia. So we're going to talk about this piece and what we're up to here in that area. Tri-state COVID-19 cases up to 113 and counting. Tri-state being New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Connecticut sees first presumptive case. More results from state-run testing for the novel coronavirus continue to come in, and as a result, the tri-state is seeing the number of confirmed cases increase exponentially with each passing day. Let's see. We'll read the what to know section here first. The number of novel coronaviruses in the tri-state area nearly doubled between Friday and Saturday. I would say that's probably just the reporting of it, but it is probably spreading very quickly. New York was up to 106 cases as of Sunday afternoon, the vast majority of which were in Westchester County, Governor Andrew Cuomo said. New Jersey had six positive samples that had been sent to the CDC for confirmation. Connecticut was connected to two of New York's positive cases, but no resident has yet been infected. And just to put a little geography on this for those who don't know, Westchester County is if you go north of the Bronx, basically up along the Hudson River, that's where that runs, so that you have an idea of what we're talking about, which is basically where people who work in Manhattan a lot of times end up commuting in and out from. Not exclusively, of course, but that's basically the New York City suburbs. There have been 82 people to test positive in Westchester County, Governor Cuomo said on Sunday, almost all of which are connected to the cluster that started with the Midtown Manhattan lawyer, the first case of community spread. Cuomo declared a state of emergency after announcing the New York state totals on Saturday afternoon. Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont, meanwhile, announced the first presumptive positive case of COVID-19 involving a Connecticut resident on Sunday, while health officials have sought to emphasize that most cases are mild and the overall risk to the general health public is quite low. Officials have already asked thousands of people in recent weeks to quarantine themselves, putting others in mandatory isolation. A few schools and college campuses have closed for cleaning. Community events have been canceled out of an abundance of caution. Local governments are implementing changes, some major, some minor, that impact the daily lives of people who will never get COVID-19. And then here's a breakdown of what's happening by state. So I'll just scan over these real fast. 106 cases. Warnings about different places related to drivers. They're trying to figure out who connects to who. You know, an Uber driver had it. You can imagine how many people he's going to have. Cases out of Brooklyn. Nassau County lab testing. That's Long Island. They're starting to up the capacity. And that's starting to work here. They said that as of Saturday morning, Mayor de Blasio said 2,255 people statewide were under voluntary quarantine, and 18 people in New York City are under mandatory quarantine. And then they have different tips about it. They're talking about the cases in New Jersey now, that there's 21 cases under investigation. That number's probably low. And they're talking about the people from CPAC. Apparently, there were people who had coronavirus at the Conservative Political Action Conference, as well as APAC, which is the American-Israel Political Action Conference. So there's the potential a number of lawmakers. In fact, most infamously on Twitter, Ted Cruz is actually in self-quarantine because he had interactions with someone who was found to have the coronavirus. So we may see more of that. Connecticut has one guy who got it from California. So, and we'll see. I mean, really, they don't know all these, but it's interesting to take a look at. New York is going to be an area that spreads quickly, widely. It's sort of inevitable unless you see shutdowns. One thing we're starting to see is a number of firms are starting to have work from home requirements, a number of schools shutting down. And I suspect you're going to see all throughout the Northeast that's common. As far as I'm aware, the only states I don't know haven't had a case. I don't think Delaware has, and I know Maine hasn't publicly announced one. Everywhere else, I know New Hampshire's up to 5. Vermont has its first case. There are quite a few down in Maryland, some in the Baltimore area, some in the D.C. suburbs. And there were 2 different ones in Pennsylvania that I was aware of. And I know Governor Wolf down there put an emergency status in there. As well as if you go up the coast, there are certainly cases in Quebec and in Ontario. So the whole Northeast, minus the far Northeast, you know, where yours truly is reporting from, has this. And I have no doubt that it's up here, too. We just don't have coverage of it yet. So what you're going to see to go through this is a lot more shutdowns. It's going to see major disruptions to the economy, to the markets, to the financial markets specifically. I mean, as if there isn't enough bad news already, right? But what we will probably see, I'm predicting, within the next week, 2 at the most, is that there may be a cessation of the stock market, at least the New York Stock Exchange, the NASDAQ, and other major indicators as the Northeast Corridor begins taking actions for the prevention of people. It's something they got to do pretty quickly in New York, because if they wait, the potential for community spread is going to be really high there, with how many people basically rely on the subway or, you know, the T system in Boston as another example. New Jersey Transit, SEPTA in Pennsylvania, or, you know, the L around Washington. So, or I guess they call it T down there. But anyway, all those places are going to be at a lot of risk. And in fact, New York is anticipating this. This is from 3 hours ago. New York City asked commuters to stay off public transit if you can to contain virus spread. And this goes down. I'm not going to read all this here because it says to take alternate travel or avoid crowded buses or trains. But I'm going to talk about the policy problem, which is the poorest people can't afford to not go to work. The level of ignorance out there in the public at large that this is still something that needs to continue, that people are being forced basically to go to work, and the government doesn't have a solution for that. People who have means and who are, you know, have some resources are able to find different ways, you know, higher middle class and up jobs are able to do that. But for the poorer people, especially whose work is largely dependent on the service sector, this has a major problem. And at the same time, we have this ongoing issue about, you know, coronavirus testing and the ability of people to get it based on their financial status or being insured. And that's a big problem, because if all the poor people get sick and they can't get tested and they have to keep going to work even though no one's there, or they lose their jobs, well, that's where the civil disorder thing comes in. And that's going to become a political issue very, very quick. And I would argue in the strongest possible terms that states and the federal government need to coordinate to have a general policy in place that makes available coronavirus testing in the interest of the mass public health for absolutely everyone, regardless of their ability to pay, you know, whatever they have to do, that's fine. If they have to use the military to help with that, I'm fine with that. So that is the situation in New York, which is not great. And so I'm gonna go also to Texas a little bit. A lot of people have been asking me down there what's going on with this, and I wanted to share some news. This is from ABC 13, that's the affiliate out of Houston. Total coronavirus cases in Houston area increases to 12. This was published last night at 11:18 p.m. Houston, Texas. One new Harris County case. Harris County Public Health announced another presumptive positive coronavirus case in Harris County on Saturday night. That's Houston. The 60 to 70-year-old female is now the 12th coronavirus case in the Houston areas and third in Harris County. Like the rest of the known cases, the woman recently traveled on the MS Asara Nile River cruise in Egypt. Now, we have seen clusters, at least I have now, in at least four or five different cities and countries that's claimed to have come from Egypt, right? But if you were to look at the international reporting, Egypt as of this moment claims they have 55 cases, which means it's a load of crap. I'm just saying, statistically, it just doesn't make sense. And we have seen all throughout the Middle East a chronic underreporting of the number of cases. And I'm not saying it's necessarily malignant. They just may not have the capacity to do it. But it's interesting because we're going to see out of this. And I hope Texas is still doing quarantine or case tracing, and I'm sure they are. But that ultimately we are going to see because we have people coming from countries that are not recognized as public health risks, but like Egypt, which very clearly are, or like Thailand was near the beginning of this. Okay. So officials say the woman is in stable condition and quarantined, and they say there's three new cases in Fort Bend County, older people in their 60s and 70s that's out there, and they're linking it all to the cruise. They're saying coronavirus crisis at Memorial Hermann Hospital. Memorial Hermann Hospital released a statement Saturday afternoon saying 11 healthcare workers who were in direct contact with a patient confirmed positive for COVID-19 were asked to self-quarantine for 14 days. Although it was initially reported that only one of the workers was showing minor symptoms, Herman now says there are three. All 11 are being tested and monitoring. See, this is the whole thing. We had been saying, and you guys have been listening, we've been saying that you needed to test your healthcare workers because now you're having the beginnings of a little bit of a cluster form, right? And you're going to have all these people come into the hospital, and where are the hospital workers? Well, they're busy on the shelf recovering from the sickness they weren't told to prepare for. And we had said this. We said this 3 damn weeks ago. I have the petition on the website to show. We were trying to get this to stop in the CDC. The failures at the beginning, just like exponential spread, are going to have momentous costs as we go forward. During an initial visit to one of our facilities, one of the confirmed cases did not present with symptoms, relevant travel, or potential exposure that would have immediately prompted CDC testing protocols, which is to say you had to be in Wuhan or China, right, or known someone who had it. 3 days later, and once it was known that passengers on the Egypt cruise had been exposed to COVID-19, one of the patients returned to our facilities and was tested. The potential exposure to our healthcare workers was related to the first visit only. And this drives me nuts. I've talked to people who say, "Well, I'm not going to let this ruin my life. I'm going to go take that cruise." Well, you selfish bastards are going to get the rest of us sick, and the blood is going to be on your hands, all because you can't stand staying at home and being still for a couple minutes. It is absolutely terrible, and it's atrocious. And you know, ironically, the number of people who I've met who say this overwhelmingly have been in that larger population bracket, who, if anyone, should be aware and be careful about the dangers that they are causing for themselves, their loved ones, and for society at large. And you know, this is one of the reasons why I've been arguing for since the beginning, we need to be much more aggressive with these travel bans. But no one wanted to do it because of economic reasons. And if you choose economics over health, you end up with neither in the end. And we're starting to see that. Let's see. In a press conference Saturday, officials with Memorial Hermann assured the public that the coronavirus appears to be a mild to moderate respiratory illness they say most people can treat at home. Well, that's true, but that also doesn't end up really telling you the full story of this, which is for somewhere between 10 to 25% of our people, this is going to be a dance with death. And I'm just saying it because it's true. I'm giving you the evidence. You know, look for yourself. It's all there. All right, so more testing linked to St. Cecilia Catholic School for those in the Houston audience. So this is going through the schools again. One person gets sick. The kids have it as mild or moderate symptoms. It looks like the flu. They're asymptomatic carriers. They bring it back to the parents. Boom. Everyone gets sick. Rice University suspends international travel. Same sort of problem existing here. So a lot of these cases are going back to Egypt as of right now. They don't have any cases that they found that are not directly related to that. But are you prepared to be confident, the people of Houston, that there is not community spread? Because it looks like they're only looking for that which is kind of easy to find. I hope they're doing better than that, but the people of Houston don't think so. Thousands canceled the petition to, or excuse me, thousands signed the petition to cancel the Houston rodeo amid growing coronavirus concerns. This is being reported by KPRC2 News in Houston from Tierra Smith. Rodeo officials say they don't plan to cancel the event as yet. A few thousand people have signed an online petition for the cancellation of the Houston Livestock and Rodeo show amid the coronavirus outbreak. The annual festival goes from March 3rd to March 22nd. And let's see here. The person's author, who was originally identified as Melissa Veliz, wrote the cancellation of the South by Southwest Festival in Austin should be a warning to cancel the Houston Rodeo. At least two international organizations have canceled conferences in Houston due to coronavirus vaccines. And she said, if the risk of this virus is bad enough to cancel South by Southwest, then it's bad enough to cancel all other major events, including the Houston Rodeo. It would be irresponsible to continue putting lives at risk for the remainder of this event. And dubbed as the largest rodeo in the world, Houston Rodeo attracts millions of people to NRG Park. However, attendance is down compared to previous years, according to the Houston Rodeo data, which is they're down by about 50,000 people as of day five. And they've had 325,000 so far, with an all-time high in 2017 of 2.6 million people. So, despite rising concerns of the coronavirus, Houston Rodeo and local officials said there are no such plans to cancel the festival at this time. Organizers said rodeo attendees vary significantly from those that typically attend South by Southwest. Quote, the rodeo is predominantly a local event, with 73% of the 2019 rodeo visitors residing in the Houston area, 94% in Texas, and 99% in the U.S., the statement read. In contrast, 26% of the South by Southwest attendees were international in 2019. Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner also echoed this message in a tweet Friday night. Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo HLSR is primarily a local event, whereas South by Southwest attracts people from over 100 countries. And they said Houston has canceled a conference called CERAWeek, which they did for 35 years, and that was a oil and gas industry conference that had people from 80 countries. So officials in Friday said they do not believe the virus has spread to the community at large, and there have been no deaths in the area connected to the virus. All right, I will bet whatever body part you want to claim off me, that's a load of crap. And that what you have is people who are saying, look, we need to get our money for the year. We're all going to be broke anyway. Can you keep it open another week so we can make our money? It's only people in Houston. One person gets sick. They go to this event, right? They get how many people sick? They get a dozen people sick, two dozen people sick. When you have tens of thousands of people sick in Houston potentially a month from now, the odds are decent that a big event like this has an overwhelming likelihood of being the means by which it happens. And I respect the people of Houston who are trying to stand against this. And, just in the same way I put Florida Governor Mark DeSantis on my list of shame, I'm going to put Governor or Mayor Sylvester Turner of Houston on my list of shame. If you choose economy over health, you will end up with neither, because people are not going to want to go there. Ask, the people in Seattle, no one's going there to go do tourist destinations. And, I don't even think if I was a business person, I'd be willing to go to New York. But this is an example of the balance being wrong in the West. And ultimately, we keep choosing what we want to do over what we need to do. We don't think of this as a war against a virus that's trying to kill us, that it has the desire to spread as widely as possible, and that we see this sort of negligence in defending the public health, which could, I mean, and the whole thing is so sad, because if we had, let's just pretend, if we had gone ahead and shut down America, it would cause a lot of problems. But if we had said, okay, we're shutting ourselves down on February 1st, we'd be saying all those people who had died, and it's a small number still, it's not big. I mean, and not compared to what it's going to get. 22 people, 564 ill, right? All those people would still be alive. And as that number grows, remember this decision. Now it's like a lit fuse, and we don't have the ability to stamp it out. This is what we're dealing with. Let's put some numbers on it. A lot of things, something I get asked a lot is how many people do I think have this in the United States? And I've thought the number had to be very high for a long time. And I will admit, I was probably overly aggressive about the numbers. I mean, I think I saw the trend line, right? But it proved a little more challenging for it to jump borders. Maybe some of those fever checks worked. Certainly, it was the most common element of the early expression of this, although obviously people got in there. So MedRxiv, which I want to thank the medical researcher who told me, because I was reading it MedRxiv, because I'm like, oh, that's prescription. But I could actually see it's probably the Greek letter, it would be pronounced Kai, MedRxiv, right? So this is the preprint server, and we have an update here estimating the scale of the COVID-19 epidemic in the United States, simulations based on air traffic directly from Wuhan. And what this article does is, I'm just going to read the abstract of it. You can read the details if you want, but it will offer you a glimpse into a model of how many people we think would have COVID-19, or at least these authors who come from, let's see where they're coming from here. Just look real fast. These are from a combination of the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center and the Beijing University Health Science Center. So it was a collaboration between U.S. and Chinese scientists, which looks like it's Dai Lin Li, Jun Louvre, Gregory Botwin, Jonathan Braun, Weihua Kuo, Limong Li, Dermot P.B. McGovern. Okay, so here's your abstract. Introduction. Coronavirus 2019 infection has been characterized by rapid spread and unusually large case clusters. It is important to have an estimate of the current state of the COVID-19 epidemic in the U.S. to develop informed public health strategies. Methods. We estimated the potential scale of the epidemic as of March 1st, so keep in mind this was as of 9 days ago, their estimate, in the U.S. from cases imported directly from Wuhan area. We used simulations based on transmission dynamics parameters estimated from previous studies in air traffic from Wuhan to the U.S. and deliberately built our model based upon conservative assumptions. Detection and quarantine of individual COVID-19 cases in the U.S. between March 1st, 2020 were also taken into account. We, a SEIR model, was used to stimulate the growth of a number of infected individuals in the Wuhan and U.S. Results. With the most likely model, keeping in mind just my interjection, this is a conservative estimate, we estimated that as of March 1st, there would be 9,484 infected cases with a 90% confidence interval of the number could be anywhere between 2,000 and 24,000 as of March 1st if no intervention procedure had been taken to reduce the transmissibility in unidentified cases. Assuming current preventative measures have reduced 25% of the transmissibility in unidentified cases, the number of infected cases would be 1,043, which is a 90% confidence interval between 107 and 2,474. So, I mean, a little bit of blocking, you can see, does a lot of good, but we're kind of past this at this point. But what they say is our conclusion, our research indicates that as of 3/1/2020, it is likely there are already thousands of individuals in the U.S. with SARS-CoV-2. Our model is dynamic and is available to the research community to further evaluate as the situation becomes clearer. And I just want to say, I went back and looked into the details. I actually paused this for 5 minutes to read this so you didn't have to hear me bumbling through. I think that based upon their model, they would say that they anticipate that you would see on average a case doubling from whatever they predicted on an interval of somewhere between 5 to 7 days, depending upon the presumptions, which fits what we're seeing other actors say. So if we use the most likely model, which I think has pretty conservative estimates within it, and that they basically only presumed in their study that this was spreading within the Asian community, which I think is a very conservative assumption, and that it would have in fact spread outside of it. But I understand why they constrained it, and they admit in their analysis, this was a crude way of looking at it, but let's just use their numbers just to have something to work with, is that if we split the difference and say maybe it doubled and a half, that we would probably, by their analysis, as of right now, as we're recording 8:35 a.m. On March 9th, that they would probably see the number somewhere between 20 and 30,000, depending upon the particulars of how you want to do it. So we'll say 25,000, and that would be a usually the way these spread statistically would mean that a very best case scenario, we would be looking at something where there's on about 5,000 people probably who have this. And if you use the same sort of intervals, you'd be looking at a high end that's starting to push closer to 100,000 and 50,000. I didn't do the math, so I'm not going to give you exact numbers, but that would be consistent with other modeling that's out there and with the rate of observed spread that we're seeing absent major interventions, which still are not going. We don't have any quarantines, and we have very few mandatory restrictions. Now, fortunately, people in the United States, hopefully thanks to the work we're doing on this podcast and a number of other brilliant researchers who are doing even better work, are going out there and are starting to cancel events and to behave in a way that reduces that transmissibility. I don't think it's hit a lot of people yet, though, frankly. I think a lot of people still kind of believe this is just a hoax, and they think it's not serious, ranging from, unfortunately, you know, to some extent, the way we've seen this administration doing it. And, you know, I don't like to talk about the political thing because no matter what I say, people get mad at me. But the administration needs to be doing a lot more, a lot better, and get in front of this. I said last night on my Twitter that the single most helpful thing that could be done in the United States is if the president went out there and told people over the age of 60 that for the good of America, that you guys need to stay home for a while until we get this under control to try to keep the ICU thing from going out of control even more quickly. And he's done the complete opposite. So keep that in mind in your own estimations. And as events work out, what that actually meant. That's a data point, and I'm not going to hit it harder because it doesn't seem like it makes a difference. One thing I will say is one of the things that's been getting us in trouble is these assumptions about how this spreads. I got a piece from the Daily Mail. This is from March 7th, 2020. Coronavirus could be spread by air conditioning and be maybe more contagious than previously thought. Scientists believe after finding traces of the virus in the hospital air duct. And you've seen the CDC protocols over and over again say this is not an aerosol, this is surface contamination. Well, this makes it more complicated that we in fact do see aerosolization of droplets, and we don't know the size of them, and because we don't know the size, we don't know the effectiveness of masks. And once again, we've had a series of assumptions put out by the public health officials that evidence has proven wrong. So let's continue. Traces of coronavirus found in a hospital air duct has led scientists to believe the disease could be spread through air conditioning units, making it more contagious than initially thought. And that's a big problem as we come into summer here, you know, where people are counting on the warm weather to save us. Well, keep this in mind. Swab analysis of rooms used by three coronavirus patients at the National Center for Infectious Diseases in Singapore suggests that the respiratory illness spreads more easily than previously thought. An air duct connected to the room of one of the patients thought to be only suffering from mild symptoms was found with traces of the virus suggests small virus-laden droplets may be displaced by airflows and deposited on equipment such as vents. The research published in the Journal of American Medical Association comes shortly after it was reported that 142 Britons were reported trapped on a Princess cruise ship anchored for patients to undergo testing off the coast of California yesterday. I guess scroll down here. Health authorities have had a suspicious eye on cruise ships in recent weeks ever since a number of voyages were disrupted by virus scares. In the most serious case, 705 people tested positive for the virus on board the Diamond Princess during a two-week lockdown in Japan. Japanese authorities said last week that a British tourist who had been on board the Diamond Princess had died after contracting coronavirus. On Thursday, a patient with underlying health conditions became the first person in the UK to die after also testing for the virus. It is standard practice for buildings and cruise ships to use recycled air through air conditioning systems. Professor James G. Dwyer from Purdue University in Indiana told Telegraph, "The problem is these systems can't filter out particles smaller than 5,000 nanometers. The size of the coronavirus is not yet known." We should know this, but a similar respiratory illness, SARS, was recorded at just 120 nanometers. Professor Dwyer said if the current COVID is of a similar size, then air conditioning system would be carrying the virus to every cabin. So what does that mean if you're working in a school, in a corporate office, or anything that's a recirculating system? I don't think it has to be an air. I mean, if, theoretically, a furnace would help because it's heat, and that would be something that would kill it. But if you're blowing air around, you know, there would be an amount of time the virus would be alive. Cruise ships could just minimize this problem by using outside air and not recirculating it. Airlines have already sought to reassure passengers that their air conditioning systems are fit to prevent the coronavirus spreading in the cabin, with Etihad suggesting their system is watertight as a hospital operating theater. In any confined area, there's a risk of contracting illnesses from other people, an airline statement reads. Well, considering the number of people we saw get sick in hospitals in Wuhan and other places, I don't know if I would invest that much confidence in this. However, the risk is considered lower on aircraft because of the use of high-efficiency particulate air filters, which are effective in capturing more than 99% of airborne microbes in filtered air. So that is a little bit better. But here's what I would say to you. You know, one of the things that we talked about 2 weeks ago when we were talking about preparations is getting filters where you have air. Make sure your air conditioning filters are up to a higher standard to protect against microbes that are up to 99%, because if not, you don't want to see this come in through the back door. And it's if you have your own separate house, it's probably less of a concern. But if you live in a building with shared air, or if you have to work in one, that's something that you're going to have to look at very carefully. It's going to be an ongoing problem. So be aware of what air you're breathing and how this is getting around, because even if it isn't truly aerosolized, it's basically behaving like it is. Okay. So we're going to go now to some good news about the evolving response. We spent a lot of time in this show talking about how the test kits haven't worked. And just as a reminder, you're listening to Coronavirus Central. We're about an hour 15 in. I'm your host, Tom Kaczynski, coronaviruscentral.net. Your one-stop shop for everything you want to hear. And you get news here you're not getting anywhere else. You know, and I want to thank everyone who's staying with us. I know you have a lot more choices out there these days, and you could either hear what they want to tell you or you could hear what's happening. If you like that, keep staying with us, and we continue to try to improve the quality of the show. But the quality of the information is second to none, and that's what you're here for anyway, you know? And we'll keep going forward long after they move on. And the other thing is, even though I can't, I might not be the best medical professional, this case, as we know, is going far beyond medicine to the societal implications. And I think it's going to be a place where we really shine as we go into these next few months. And the goal that we've been trying to do is we want to continue this show for at least the next 3.5 months. And that's what the Kickstarter is about, allowing us to put together a team so we can see this crisis through to hopefully what will be the end. And then we will reevaluate where we're going, because I will tell you, this thing is not going to solve itself in the next 30 days, 60 days, or 90 days. There's going to be a lot going on. So buckle in. It's going to be a while. All right. But we do have some good news, like I said, and the United States, realizing it has had some failures with its testing, is now reaching out to Korea. And this is from the Korea Biomedical Review. This was actually published just today at, let's see, that's 4:52 p.m. Korea time. So I don't know what time that would be here. I imagine it's about 5 in the morning. Okay, so U.S. asked Korea about 2019 COVID containment know-how. The Ministry of Science and ICT said the United States government has asked the Korean government about the know-how in operating a coronavirus drive-through testing station. And this is actually pretty cool. They've been taking the hospital parking lots and making outside stations where people drive up, they can get the test done, they don't have to go into the hospital, they don't have to go into the facility, risk getting people sick. So it definitely is an improvement over what we've seen to this point. Reading onward, it appears that the U.S. administration has viewed that our method of rapidly testing suspected COVID-19 cases to reduce the risk of infection, the ministry said. Minister of Science Choi Ki-young held a conference call on Friday with Kelvin Drogemeyer, director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, on COVID-19 response aimed at sharing information on the infectious disease and seeking joint solutions. During the meeting, which was requested by the White House, Choi explained Korea's countermeasures, such as a drive-through mobile clinic, which allows patients to receive checkups in their cars, and an app that shows whether patients are successfully carrying out their self-containment. A growing number of local governments here are launching the roadside testing facilities as the demand for COVID checkups soared, increasing waiting time and raising the risk of infection. Such clinics are known to be highly efficient, as they require no negative room pressure facilities, sanitation, or ventilation facilities, as they are installed outdoors. It's a great idea. The entire process, which comprises of various medical examinations such as heat detection and the extraction of samples, takes only about 10 minutes compared to the 30 minutes required at hospitals. As of Monday, there are 50 drive-through clinics operated in Korea. As the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy is a policy department under the U.S. President's Office, experts here believe there is a possible the U.S. will adopt the drive-through clinic system soon. In America, COVID-19 infection is rising rapidly, especially in the states of New York and Washington, with more than 400 people infected nationally. Other countries have also expressed intentions to set up such facilities. According to a German media outlet, Four German doctors recently established a drive-through screening clinic in Marburg in the state of Hessen. Anyone who has been in a risk area who has had contact with a coronavirus-infected people have only to stay seated in the car in the parking lot. Hit Radio FHH, a German radio station, reported. The doctors in protective clothing then take the samples from the potential patients. The report added that the doctors were inspired by the reports of a similar system in Korea. Regarding the self-containment app, the program uses a global positioning system that alerts health officials when a patient leaves the quarantine, allowing medical workers to respond immediately. So that's some good news with the treatment protocol. I've heard that, in fact, that this is being looked at in certain places. I heard one story that someone reported me that they saw this being beginning to be implemented at Brigham Women's Hospital in Boston, which has been a place that's starting to have some show. We also have this story from National Public Radio. This is from John Hamilton on March 8th, 2020. The Seattle healthcare system offers drive-through coronavirus testing for workers. Employees of the University of Washington's UW Medicine system can now get tested for coronavirus without leaving their cars. The system's medical center in Northwest Seattle has turned a hospital garage into a drive-through clinic that can test a person every 5 minutes. They typically get results within a day or so, but the idea involves more than just convenience. It's also about safety. Because of the way this virus could be spread, we want to make sure there's good ventilation, says Dr. Seth Cohen, who runs the infectious disease clinic at UW Medical Center Northwest. Coronavirus has already caused at least 17 deaths in the Seattle area and infected at least 83 people. So staff have placed three medical tents on the first floor of the center's multi-level garage, which is not enclosed. Signs and orange cones funnel vehicles to the testing site. On the clinic's first morning of operation, a cold breeze was blowing through the structure. Cohen described it as an excellent airflow that you can feel. When workers first drive in, they're greeted by Jen Nakahara, a nurse who usually works at the University Hall's Health Center. "I'm going to have you pull up," she tells the driver. "Don't get out of your car." For now, the drive-through clinic is limited to health workers in the university healthcare system, and they need to have a fever, dry cough, or other symptoms of COVID-19, the disease caused by coronavirus. If they had symptoms, they would go and fill out a survey online, Nakahara says. Then, if the screeners thought sounded like a possibility of coronavirus, they were given an appointment today. The next stop at the testing clinic is the front of three white medical tents. Jeff Gates, a nurse at the medical center, approaches each car. Like Nakahara, he's in full personal protective gear, including a clear plastic face mask. "Hello, my name is Jeff," he tells the driver. "We're going to be doing your swabs today." Gates prepares to take two swabs through the open window, one in each nostril. "I'm going to have you lean your head back just a little bit. Try not to move on me," he said as he inserts the first swab. "Sorry, I know that's uncomfortable." Gates takes the samples he's collected and seals them in plastic tubes to be processed in a lab a few miles away. "We're going to be testing for both influenza A and B, RSV, as well as COVID-19. So they're often, and that's respiratory virus infection. So it's something that looks like a cold. "Thank you," he adds. "I hope you feel better soon." Then it's time for Gates to put on fresh protective gear and get ready for the next arrival. "It's been going great," he says. "Very smooth. We probably had 7 people come through this morning. The traffic here is expected to increase dramatically in the next few days. For now, the clinic will continue to focus on healthcare workers because they will be essential if the coronavirus continues to spread in the Seattle area. We want to make sure that if our staff tests negative, we can get them back to work as soon as we can," Cohen says. "But if they test positive, we want to keep them out of the workforce to make sure they're not going to infect other staff or patients." The medical center plans to extend in-car testing to first responders who may have been exposed. The university also expects to work with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to provide coronavirus testing kits that patients can use at home. Home testing would be fantastic. But home kits rely on swabs that don't go nearly as far into the nasal passages as the ones testing clinics use, so scientists still need to verify that home kits won't miss any infections, Cohen says. As results from wider testing comes in, Cohen says, the information should help public health officials assess the current outbreak. It will definitely give us a clue as to whether COVID has other epicenters within Seattle, including other institutions, he said. So far, the drive-through tests have found lots of flu and a few cases of coronavirus. So that we're learning something. I think that's good. So I wanted to share that with you because I think, you know, it shows that there is some positive developments. I think that that's a really good method that's being put in there. It needs to be very quickly implemented as widely as possible. It will be more of a problem in walking densely populated urban cities like New York, frankly, than it will be in Western cities where you have like Seattle, where most people are going to drive, most people are going to own a car. But we'll see. I mean, it's certainly a model, the sort of model that emphasizes the protection of the worker as well as quick information to the patient is good. And I hope we see this more widely distributed and hope the administration, as suggested by their conversations with Korea, is looking about how to implement this. And it will also potentially limit some supplies so that as people have the critical need that is going to emerge, that this is something that can be stopped or at least mitigated. Stopped is the wrong word because people are going to go around. I mean, unless everyone walks around with a mask and exercises optimum protection, which frankly they're not, and they probably aren't going to, they're still going to get sick and you're going to have community spread. But this helps a lot. So it's really good news. Okay, so I'm going to give you a piece. This is from Al Jazeera. This is from February 26th. And we're going to take a minute here and talk about the economic implications of what's happening because there's a couple different parts of this story, right? And one of the big parts is that the market is being absolutely torched by what's happening. And I want to kind of explain what we're seeing. You're going to see the Dow go down probably another 1,000 points today, unless I'm really wrong about that. And not just me, I mean, people who are looking at this. But it's important to kind of connect a couple pieces of what's happening, how it's related to COVID, and what the issues are. So we're going to start with this piece from, it would have been 2 weeks ago, but the basic gist of it's still very relevant, and it will give you background on what's happening here and why the other pieces happen. So the first step is coronavirus, right? COVID gets a bunch of people sick. Chinese economy largely shuts down. Goods aren't shipping. We pick it up there. Hugely disruptive. Coronavirus torpedoes global shipping. Supply chain disruptions placing hundreds of millions of dollars worth of shipping business in jeopardy, says official. Tanker charter rates have torpedoed more than 80% as the coronavirus outbreak continues to slam the brakes on large economies, costing the shipping sector hundreds of millions in lost business, an industry official told Reuters news agency. While some of the revenue is gone for good, a trade rebound could put the sector back into calmer waters this year, later this year, International Chamber of Shipping Secretary General Guy Platten said. The ICS is the main trade association for merchant ship owners and operators, representing more than 80% of the world's merchant fleet. He called the outbreak of the COVID-19 virus hugely disruptive for the shipping sector, triggering a significant decrease of raw material imports in economic powerhouse China because factories had stopped and are only starting to recover. And we don't have any good evidence that they're recovering. We have these electrical numbers, but we've looked at other, beyond what the Chinese government's saying, if you look at other things like traffic cameras, if you look at a number of different things, China's economy at best is functioning at 30 to 50% of what it was. Now, how many people you need employed to handle the manufacturing capacity, given the level of automation they have, is a fair question and one we should look at. But in any case, we have backups in the ports, disruptions back and forth, and it looks like this supply outage that's continuing has continued through to now, and I have no evidence. And I'd be happy to present it if it comes out that this is getting back to speed, but it isn't. And not only that, because China's having to keep a lot of their goods for themselves because they've got a problem. And we've reported on this channel several times that we have seen reinfection or perhaps recurrence of existing infection, we don't know which, happening in a large number of people in one province in Guangdong. And we're not even including other provinces like Hubei, where frankly, we don't have a lot of visibility on what's happening beyond what the Chinese government is telling us. And there have been a lot of problems from moment one about that. Okay, so, and they're explaining what the problem is. On the finished goods sides of it, you've got empty containers, for example, in China, and you've got a shortage of containers in the United States because the manufacturing goods are not getting out of China and being transported all around the world. It's affecting all the supply chain throughout the shipping industry. And he said it was hard to estimate the overall cost. All we know is there's been an absolute plunge in rates for various classes of ships. We know the container lines are doing empty sailings. It would be hundreds of millions of dollars that would be in jeopardy now. In the tanker sector, we know that rates have fallen off by 80% in just that area alone. And so they're saying that they're not swapping crews in China, which they usually do, that they're saying that container ships round trips through Chinese ports were being increasingly canceled because of low load levels. and ship owners are asking staff to stay on board. So it's definitely, let's see, separately, the German Ship Owners Association, VDR, told its annual news conference in Hamburg that terminal operations in Chinese ports were not going smoothly because truck drivers and port workers were missing. So quarantines have an impact. Goods are not moving, services are not moving. They've poured sugar in the gas tank of the world economy. What is happening when it happens? All right, an article from today, Business Insider. This is written, it was published about an hour ago by Rosie Perper and Bill Bostock. Oil is down 21% after its biggest drop in decades following Saudi price cuts that sparked a race to the bottom with Russia. Oil prices tumbled as much as 34%, the most in decades, between Sunday and Monday. In later trading, the price stabilized to around 21% below the previous day. The dramatic plunge was prompted by Saudi Arabia, which sharply cut prices when the market opened on Monday. It was a response to Russia, which over the weekend refused to restrict how much oil it was producing, and this was the biggest drop since the Gulf War in 1991. So, just going to skip through some of this. A lot of this is Goldman Sachs analyst warned the price of oil could tumble further still, as low as $20 a barrel. Shares all across the energy sector are way down. Why is this important? Well, let's think about the crash, and this is their article. The crash is fueled by sinking demand due to the worldwide spread of the coronavirus, which in turn sparked a series of price cuts. So let's talk about the economics of this for one second. Cheap oil sounds good, but it has problems. Number one is America is making a lot of country now, or excuse me, a lot of money now as an oil exporter. When that price goes below 40, everyone who was involved in industrial shale, all those other things, those companies now end up being not profitable. So we will see a number of people in the different energy extraction, production, refinement industries go ahead and have their companies in major peril. And we even are hearing about margin calls that are happening. For those who don't understand finance, what ends up happening is at the end of a market day, you have to have a certain amount of assets. A certain amount of liquid cash available, or however these are calculated. And if you don't have it, the margin call happens is that you have to sell collateral sufficient to satisfy all debts. If you don't understand the way it works, go watch Trading Spaces. It's an older movie. It's a comedy with Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd, and you'll understand what a margin call is. And you could probably use the distraction. But a lot of things that are happening where stocks are going down across the board. People are being forced to collateralize and sell assets. That's what you're keeping. You're seeing that gold is beginning to get into the market. Silver prices were actually oddly enough down because these things were being liquidated, and you see oil prices down. So I'm not going to give you the deepest economic analysis of it today, but what I am saying to you is that you see the shutdown of different elements of the global economy, and at some point, as debts come due and they can't be paid because we have the Federal Reserve, central banks are putting money out there. They're trying to increase liquidity, right? They're trying to increase the amount of money in the system to try to stimulate economic growth. But if the consumers aren't going out and the producers aren't providing product, it becomes impossible to do that. And you end up with inflation and you end up with a sustained market dive. And that's basically what we're observing here in the macro sense of it. And it's hard to say where the floor is because the problem is the floor is dependent on what coronavirus does. And we see it continues to expand. And we have this weird symbiotic, almost parasitic relationship where we keep the economy afloat, right? We're trying to ignore coronavirus to keep the economy afloat. But the longer we do that, the more we facilitate the spread of the coronavirus that's destroying the economy, which is why I've made this really simple theorem. If forced to choose between health and economics, you better choose health because you can survive with health without economics. You can't survive economics without health. And what we're looking at here, and I'll just give you an update. This is from the Financial Times, all right? Coronavirus latest, oil price crash sends shockwaves through financial markets. And I think this is actually interesting. Adam Sampson just published this, a word on US market kill switches. In the wake of the 1987 Black Monday crash, which wiped more than a fifth of the Dow Jones Industrial Average in one day, curbs were enacted to ease panicky trading on Wall Street. NASDAQ, one of the main US exchange operators, has on Monday written to traders, reminding them that these so-called circuit breakers may halt trading temporarily or, under extreme circumstances, close the markets before the normal close of the trading session. There are three levels that trigger these automatic reactions, okay, across US equities markets. Each is based on the broad S&P 500. Level 1, 7% fall. Level 2, 13% fall. Level 3, 20% fall. If either a level one or level two fall calls falls, excuse me, if either a level one or level two fall occurs before 3:25 p.m. New York time, trading is halted for 15 minutes. If it happens at or after that time, trading continues as normal. A level three drop halts trading for the remainder of the day, regardless of when it is triggered. Wall Street stocks typically trade from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. The only time markets have been halted for the remainder of the day to trading curves was in 1997 during the Asian financial crisis. Different circuit breakers based on the narrower Dow Jones Industrial Average were in effect at that time. U.S. stock index futures hit their lowest limit earlier on Monday. The futures, which trade on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, can only fall 5% outside of normal U.S. stock trading hours. These type of limit down scenarios are much more common. So, just to give you a warning, what happened was on the off hours trading, and the markets are going to open about 25 minutes here, probably after I'll have the show up. What the if the market fell in trading off hours under over 5%, they shut it down. And in fact, we are thinking that today we might see a fall happen in maybe that level one category at 7% if that carries through. And this is just tons of wealth being lost. It's going to have all sorts of problems that exist here. And so this article has a lot of economic sort of informations about what's happening and how different things are going and problem junk bond prices tumble as problems mount for energy groups. A lot of different information out there. Suffice it to say that Fed ramps up repo operation offering $150 billion in overnight loans. I mean, prices are going to jump like crazy because the Fed is trying to save business at the cost of that. Realistically, everything's going to cost us a lot more. And I doubt the government is putting the same level of consideration into what is being done for the consumer economy and individuals, but it very much needs to. So we're going to keep an eye on this story going forward. I think it's an important element of this, and I want you guys to be on top of it. So other than that, let me just look real fast. Just want to mention again, later on tonight, we'll have two things for you. If you go to the YouTube channel, and it has a almost a difficult URL to find, but the link to it is on the website every day for every story that you can see it at coronaviruscentral.net. And follow us on Twitter at coronaviruscast. A lot of times I get the stories out very quick, so you have the opportunity to see them in real time, and we share information back and forth. We got the Kickstarter going out on this. Here's what I'm asking for you. I know that we have between 15 to 20,000 listeners every day. Presumably, you get a lot of value from this information. We want to provide more. We want to be helpful and be part of a growing community. We're asking for people to kick in for the next 4 months to sustain this, at least $5 for listening. I mean, you'd pay that much for a cup of coffee, a lot of people, and I know that's a lot of money for some. But for some, you can do that. And we have tiers at $5, $20, and $60, which equal out to $5 in total, $5 a month, or $15 a month for those who have more means. Help keep us afloat. If we get more money, here's what our plans are. We want to expand our ability to get information across international boundaries, across the boundaries of language. We are working to develop a website, superior audio quality. We now have a research network actively working together, and we're helping to network doctors, nurses, and medical professionals to share cases with one another outside of the system, because right now there isn't a lot of information. We are working aggressively to do this. And as this goes forward, what we are also planning on doing is developing our own indicators. So if, you know, people do unfortunately end up getting sick and dying, you don't just have to trust official government statistics. It's a big open source network. It's a community. We want you to join us. I'm not just asking you to give money without understanding what this is. t.me/coronavirus central. See what we're about. Reach out to us. If you can provide some support, it's helpful. You know, either way, I'm going to keep doing this, but it'll be the difference between me being able to do it 3 days a week and doing it 6 days a week. I assume that if you're listening every day, it's worth that much to you. If you guys all kick in, we can do some amazing work and keep people safe. And frankly, it will save us all a lot of money, a lot of hardship, and make life a lot better. So hopefully we'll see you there. YouTube will have the show tonight at 7 p.m. It'll be from 7 to about 8, maybe 8:30. We'll cover whatever the news of the day is, your questions, wider commentary. We go and look at whatever's out there. You guys ask the questions, I offer answers. I only warn you that, you know, I will answer you honestly. So just be ready for what you ask for to the best of my ability. Other than that, I just want to say thank you to everyone for listening today. We'll close with the prayer as we always do. And we pray that, you know, that what we do today is that we begin prioritizing the lives of our fellow citizens, of our people, above, money. You know, it said you can't serve two masters, and I think that really comes true today as we look at these decisions we make. And I hope that our leaders have the wisdom and foresight to put more emphasis on health than wealth at this point, recognizing that every life is precious and that we want to save everyone. That's what we try to do on the show every day. God bless you guys for tuning in to us, Coronavirus Central. I'm Tom Kaczynski. I will see you tomorrow.